I can sing.
I hate every ape I see, from chimpanzee to chimpanzee. No, you'll never make a monkey out of me. You finally made a monkey.
Yes, we finally made.
And now it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, you damn dirty apes! Anyone who knows me knows that I am a big sucker for monkeys and talking dogs. But I have an especially special place in my heart for simian cinema. If there's a guy in an ape suit in some old black and white movie, I'm there. Whether Dunstan is checking in, or Clyde is taking a right turn, or it's time for Bonzo to go to bed, I'm in front of the screen with bells on. A Planet of the Apes is a planet of pure joy. If I had my way, I would be in the jungle with the adopted family of Lord Greystoke himself. I don't care. I love the biggest city-smashing Kong to the tiny poison date-eating Capuchin. Hey, speaking of poison dates, we got a hot date with a monkey movie today. Conveniently named, The Monkey. And yes, I know it's a metal and cloth toy monkey, but I don't care. It still tickles my murder bone, and I will happily fling my poo at anyone who wants to speak ill of this magnificent chimp fest. Enjoy!
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am one of your hosts, Jason Giaconetti, and tonight I'm joined by none other than Two True Freaks OG, Chris Honeywell.
It is what it is, the word of the Lord.
And that snicker you heard was the hair metal hero, Chris Tyler.
Oh shit, man, that sucks.
And my brother Luke is not here this evening due to family obligations, but we are forging on ahead of him. My line was going to be this: we're swingers, so yeah, you know.
That's Osgood Perkins. He puts his arm around
him. Yeah. And if you can't tell what we're talking about, then where the hell you been? We're talking about 2025's The Monkey. Yes, Osgood Perkins, the guy who brought you Long Legs, has brought you Stephen King's The Monkeys. The Monkey is a short story from the Skeleton Crew?
Is it Skeleton Crew?
Skeleton Crew, yeah. It's in Skeleton Crew. Skeleton Crew actually has The Mist in it also, which is, you know, pretty freaking good as well.
Yeah, we've talked up the short story collections many times.
I think it was Wee Magazine. It was a porno magazine.
I think
originally
so.
Before Skeleton Crew came out, it was an insert in a porno magazine. Yeah.
That seems about right.
Yeah.
Because Stephen King had, was it Playboy? Where was
Playboy, he? Cavalier, Wee, yeah. He was published in everything.
Yeah. But I'm trying to remember, if I remember correctly, and I could be incorrect, I want to say Robert Bloch was published in Playboy as well. I think it was post-Psycho.
I totally see that for sure.
But like it was some of his other stories were put, like some of his short stories, which makes perfect sense because they're before, okay. For those younger listeners, Robert Bloch is the guy who brought you Psycho and like every other freaking crazy thing that Rod Serling didn't come up with or Richard Matheson didn't come up with or whatever kind of thing. But like they would publish in these men's magazines, short stories by horror authors because that's who was reading this stuff. So, So Osgood Perkins, obviously the son of Anthony Perkins, let's keep the Psycho connection going, right? you know, this is 2025. So Long Legs, that was 2024, if I'm correct, right? That was the,
yes.
Yeah. So this must have been the film that came out right after this. And this was definitely much more of a mainstream release than I would say Long Legs was. And the thing is that this came out in February, so we're now, you know, a few months later here, right? When this came out, this had a ton of buzz around it. A lot of people were looking forward to it. And I think that has to do, not so much, and it's not to knock Osgood Perkins, because we like him, well, bless him. I know we like him, the guy as a director.
So far, so good. The movies I've seen have been pretty damn good.
Right. But I think the name Stephen King still holds a place with people of a certain age. Maybe not the younger generation. Like Haley wouldn't. I mean, like, so my daughter may be a little more well-versed in horror than some. Like, she knows who Stephen King is, but she's never read Stephen King. She asked to read some Stephen King, and I said, okay, and I bought her Carrie, which is the first book you should read for Stephen King, especially.
Starting point,
first. It was my first Stephen King book as well. Well, I shouldn't say that. No, it was. It was my first Stephen King book as well. I think I'd read one of the short stories too, I think. But I figured for, you know, a girl who's 14 years old.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah,
Carrie makes perfect sense, right?
Sure.
And she had not read it yet, but because, you know, school shit gets in the way, how that tends to go. By the way, The Alchemist, we had to read, she read this summer. Fucking sucks. Just FYI.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, never read it. Guess what? The whole book's about fuck all nothing. But unlike Jerry Seinfeld and in Seinfeld, which is a show about nothing, this one was boring as shit. Anyway, I digress. Back to the monkey. So, you know, Stephen King still holds a place and people still know that name, even if Stephen King's more recent work might not be. I don't know how to describe this to people.
It's more true crime slash potboiler.
Right. But I'm saying, but remember when like a Stephen King book would come out? Remember how that was like? So.
Oh my God. I would have to go put my name on a list at the library ahead of time. And they would call me up and be like, okay, the Stephen King book's in. Hurry up and come and get it because you got to read it and get it back because there's this long list of, and everybody was. Like everybody, all the adults, all the kids, everybody was reading the new Stephen King book as it came out. And what with those first set of books, they were all just, you know, they were something to write home about, you know? Yeah.
So I clearly remember, like, cause again, my mom would get whatever the new, my mom read every single Stephen King book ever. She read, well, I don't know about the more current stuff, but every new one she read. I remember my mom bringing it to the beach and reading it on the beach and then a whole lot of other moms reading it too. And my mom going, this is terrifying. Right. She's like, well, I'm sitting on a beach with people I know in broad daylight and going, I can't read this at night. My mom reads books voraciously. Right. And Luke would attest to this too. But like my mom would say, like, this was intense. Like certain things would bother like Cujo bothered her because there was a kid in danger and stuff like that. Like, but like she goes, this was intense. Like when Misery came out or like what? Holy shit! Like it's hard to describe it to people who were not alive at that time.
Yeah,
to experience.
I had one of the greatest nightmares of my life after finishing up Salem's Lot.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great I had a dream where my whole family turned into vampires I had to fight them off. And then, like, I was walking through the town covered in blood, looking for an ambulance afterwards. And I was like, it was like a movie. And I woke up from it in a cold sweat. And I was just like, that was a nightmare, Stephen King. Thank you.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I had my
sister in my nightmare, my sister scraping on the window outside my room, you know.
So one of the things and again, this might be, not everyone feels this way, but it is a common conceit, is that Stephen King sometimes doesn't know how to, the story's great, but he doesn't know how to
the landing.
Right, how to like wrap it up. And to me, The Stand is like probably the most perfect example of that kind of thing, where it just kind of feels like it keeps going. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot in The Stand. The Stand is basically two books together, right? But like Salem's Lot is one of those books that like was really good. And then, like, at the end, you're like, okay, wrap this up, Steve. Okay, Stevie, let's wrap this up, like, kind of thing. Like, it just kind of felt at the end, it just didn't wrap up as neatly as it could. But if that's your complaint about it, it wasn't that it wasn't like horrific. It wasn't that it was like, you know, because you're in it, you're in it. And that's the con people's complaint has always been about King, is that sometimes his novellas and or short stories pack more of a punch
Yeah.
because he doesn't get time to dick around. And I don't mean
They've
that in a
had better
negative way.
luck in their movie
100%.
adaptations too,
100%. 100%. I'm trying to think of, so, because I this was a discussion I had, I think I was talking to Luke about it.
The Mangler aside.
Yeah, well, you know. But I'm saying is, what is like the best Stephen King movie? Like, what's the best movie for Stephen King? Now, I mean, I'm so totally biased. I have Carrie White, you know, from the cover of Cinefantastique. I have Sissy Spacek tattooed on my thigh. I always think it's Carrie is my favorite Stephen King movie, right? It's not everybody's, but to me, that is. But Carrie is one of his shorter novellas. It's just a novella, right? It's not even a whatever, right? So I started thinking, like, take the novellas out of it. Take the short stories out. No Graveyard Shift, no The Mist. You throw the monkey out of it. What's the full,
Misery.
yeah, Misery might be the best one, right? The
Stand
dark,
By Me is pretty good. That's a
it,
novella.
it that's a novella though.
Yeah,
Stand,
that's right.
yeah,
That's right.
right? Misery might be the best one for overall movie. I really enjoyed The Dark Half. I thought that was a good movie, right, kind of
Yeah,
thing. But it's
that movie doesn't get the love that it deserves.
right.
I mean, it's George Romero too, so.
Right. And The Dark Half to me as a book was just, I mean, dude, that thing sucked me in. I was reading. I was like, okay. Like, I really liked The Dark Half. And I had seen the movie before I read the book, right? But then I'm thinking, like, Needful Things as a movie is really good,
Yeah.
right? But it's another movie that people have kind of forgotten, you know,
The
kind of
Dead
thing.
Zone.
It's again, people, again, The Dead Zone's another one, but people kind of forget those things. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard because Misery still, I mean, just her hobbling him, that scene alone puts that movie through people's nightmares the rest of their lives. But like Stephen King novels are hard to adapt, or for some reason seem much harder
Yeah.
to adapt. The perfect example would be The Shining, right? Stephen King hates Stanley Kubrick's movie because Stanley Kubrick's movie is not Stephen King's book.
No, it's
Yeah.
Stanley Kubrick's
It's Stanley Kubrick's
took the idea and did what he wanted with it,
right.
and
Exactly. And that's why King always hated it, right? Because it's not his book. It's Stanley Kubrick's movie. You know what I'm saying? Whereas like Doctor Sleep, which we did on this show, you know, I think is more true
he wrote the
to
script too
this, yeah,
for
kind of thing.
that.
Like, but I think it's more true to what Doctor Sleep
Oh yeah.
the book was, right? But
Up
yeah.
to this point, Dr. Sleep was the closest movie I ever saw, and I'd read Dr. Sleep too. But watching the movie, it wasn't even like reading the book Dr. Sleep. The way the movie was made, and probably had a lot to do with the screenplay, was like watching that movie and the way the movie played out. And I think I'm leading into saying this one does it too. But it was similar to the experience of, it captured the experience of reading a Stephen King book. It felt like the way Stephen King tells a story. And this one might be in competition for the most Stephen King feeling movie. There's so many elements of this that Osgood Perkins just really knew how to do. Like, I'm saying right down to even the wardrobe in this movie, the dialogue, the wardrobe, and Stephen King, when he would tell just when he just had a story that was just about being scary and gory and humorous, you know, it would always have a bunch of humor in it, and it would be like, there's no deep meaning to this. I'm just g gonna gross you if I'm gonna try to scare you. And then I'm going to try to gross you out. That's what this movie, like, there was a scene where the aunt was going down into the basement and she's got her bathrobe on and she's got that raccoon shirt on and stuff. And I'm looking at it today and thinking, that is, you know, Stephen King would have described, you know, she was wearing her favorite raccoon t-shirt, you know.
Right.
It's just uncanny, and it's just joyfully Stephen King like from top to bottom. And the second viewing, it was even more pronounced.
Yeah,
and that's a rare thing. Like, I think Carpenter did it a bit with Christine,
mm-hmm.
but not as much. Like, this and Dr. Sleep are the two closest movie experiences to reading something that Stephen King wrote.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons why. And again, there was some pushback on the when this came out. I think some people were expecting. I don't know what people were expecting. I never quite understand what
if
people
you saw
actually
the trailer
expect.
You knew what to expect,
right? right. I'm saying is like, you know. I thought this had a more comedy than I expected at first when I was watching the trailer. I'm like, well, this is a little more comedy than I kind of thought, and because there is a number of comedic things that occur here, but not comedy like chuckle comedy. Like, it's like, oh god. Whoa. and you kind of yeah. laugh, but it's funny, but in a like pitch black.
It is pitch
yeah, black.
The real estate agent is pure. Yeah. Like, well, you know, she's got all these lines forewarning her death, you know, before yeah. it happens. And then on the second viewing, when you know what happens, you catch those lines yeah. a lot more.
Just and fucking shocking her in the face.
Like, you know, and she's talking to him, and then she starts sort of like just beginning to hit on him. And it's just beautifully. It's all timed out and written. And like people were like, well, the thing about Stephen King is he captures the parlance of, you know, the way real people talk and stuff. I disagree. I don't think he does it. But he does it more so than anybody else. It's still he does, like, his characters are like real. They're caricatures, but they're realistic caricatures.
Right. Yeah.
And this movie, like the dumb stoner kid.
Yeah.
One of the dumb stoner kids. Yeah, right. the kid who wanted the monkey at the end. He's, you know, he's right out of a, you know, Stephen King would have been describing him picking his boogers and stuff yep. like that. And it all comes through in that. I love the whole theme in this movie of all the young, super young people who are in positions of power that are just fucking right out of Idiocracy.
Yeah.
That priest, the priest in this is like the doctor in Idiocracy. There you go with that fag talk again. Guy in Idiocracy. That was the preacher. It might even have been this. I don't think it was the same actor, but yeah. And the like the talk between the two kids, you know, the crudeness of and the cruelty that, like, you know, ostensibly an older brother is, you know, even though he's older just by a few minutes.
Yeah.
That dynamic of two brothers, one being the older brother's kind of a prick and the younger brother's kind of a wimp, is perfect in this. It's just perfect.
Yeah.
And not exactly realistic, but
just
right there.
Yeah, it's heightened for yeah. sure. But
yeah. So, and then what you wind up having, that's a fucking word, what you wind up having here, as we were saying, is you have, there's references obviously throughout. I mean, there's like the babysitter's name is Annie Wilkes, which is, you know, the Kathy Bates from Misery. And, you know, someone's referred to as Torrance, and obviously Jack Torrance. And there's the hotel has things, don't eat after midnight, which is a reference to Gremlins. And there's all that kind of stuff that Osgood Perkins likes to put in as his nods to other things, because he's a fan, and he has said that openly, that he is ultimately, at the end of the day, he's a fan of horror and this stuff in the 80s, and he puts this stuff in his movies. And if you think about it, just like Long Legs, which was a period piece, because it was technically, I mean, it's not current day kind of thing. The whole point when in Long Legs, it was taking place a couple years ago or several years ago, because you had a difference of the way people were doing here. This is 100% a quote unquote period piece. This is not modern day. When you're watching the first half of this movie, it's all taking place, obviously,
late '90s.
Like, you know,
it's like late '90s, but it's still, he's still playing the, the 70s. Like, yeah, I noticed in modern times of this, he still had phone books and like,
yeah,
the kid had the 70s hamburger phone by the side of his bed and stuff, right, like, you know, landline, yeah, and stuff. So it has a little bit of that nostalgia almost for the time period of when Stephen King was at his peak.
Right.
But it was set at the nine, you know, but, you know, there's cell phones in this movie eventually, right, and stuff.
In the second half of it.
Even the second half still has a little retro feel to it.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie could almost be a VHS horror rack hanger on.
Yep.
Because if this was put out in the 80s, that's exactly the kind of movie it would have been. It would have been a fun time movie. You go out and rent with your friends. It had that feel to it too. That like Gremlins, Reanimator type of a feel to it, where it's like, yeah,
we're definitely closer to Reanimator.
I'm about to say, yeah, like, those are two different ends of the spectrum here: Gremlins and Reanimator.
Well,
unrated, never in the theaters.
They're both just kind of gory and funny and
mean-spirited. Okay. Yes,
you know?
I get what you mean.
And they would play great to a room full of teenagers sitting around the VCR. You know, this movie feels like if it came out in the 80s, it would have been a big hit on the VHS tape, and it would have been like all over HBO and Skinamax. Yep. Probably Skinamax would be playing it all the time.
Yep,
because it's just it's a crowd pleaser.
Yeah,
at least with my crowd.
Yeah. Is it though? I mean, it's so mean-spirited.
Yeah.
It's just
people mean-spirited because it gives them a chance to, you know, there's a lot of people that have a lot of, you know, would like to.
But even being mean-spirited though, it delivers what it says on the tin. It at the end sends you home. I mean, it has a happy ending, not for the people on the bus, but it has an happy ending.
I was shitting myself laughing.
So a funny story. We did one of these screen unseens, the first one we did, which we saw the worst movie of 2025, Magazine Dreams, sucks ass, don't fucking waste your time. Literally, I've never wanted to walk out of a movie. Oh, yeah, you won't. It's god awful. But people are like, it's amazing because it's Jonathan Majors, you know, the guy who we're not supposed to talk about it anymore because he supposedly beat up a woman and then maybe didn't and didn't get arrested and whatever. Anyway, it's shit about bodybuilding, but it fucking sucks. But we walked into the theater we were going to because you don't know what you're seeing. You walk in blind for $6. And the end of the monkeys playing, and Haley and I sit there. We saw them driving off and then all the heads getting knocked off on the bus. She goes, well, I know how that movie ends now. And I said, that's hysterical.
Yeah.
Which it is, right? Yeah. Okay. So the thing is, though, with this, is that obviously, as mean-spirited as it is, and it is, the humor hits at certain points, right? Every time there's a funeral, it's
every
like
time there's bang, hard cuts are hilarious.
Right. And that's the thing is, unlike a movie that's building tension and building tension and building tension, like the whole way through. Like, I mean, there are several movies we've watched where the tension just feel, it's palpable. You feel it build and build, and there's no comedy. There's no laugh. There's no, because that's what you need. It's the old porno thing. And they talk about this with the old slasher movies from the 80s. They said, when you go to a porno, after you have, you know, this whatever climax, whatever, you needed to give everyone a smoke break to come back down before the next sex scene happened. And the same thing used to happen in old style slasher movies, to the point where was it Graduation Day? I'm trying to remember which one it was. They literally took a stopwatch to it and they would build, kill, and it would kill. And then it would come down and let the audience come all the way down again and then build them back up again. And that's what you're starting to get some of it here. That you have like that, and it's, you kind of laugh and you release some of that, you know, whatever is building up. And that's not necessarily tension per se, because it's not scary that way, but you kind of like, you have a different emotion than you think you're going to have, right? You're either disgusted by the sleeping bag that looks like a cherry pie that's been run over, or the aunt getting, you know, burned her whole face and what, like, there's always that kind of cut that's happening that allows you to then reset. And that's very old school in thinking, but we don't see it now. I'm thinking of like, you guys, I don't know if you guys have seen it. The movie's called Talk to Me. It's the
I haven't
brother.
seen it
I haven't
Okay.
seen it yet.
It's the brothers who just did their new movie is Bring Her Back, which is I've heard is just unrelenting. But it's their move. That movie does not have a laugh or a giggle. It's straightforward. It's depressing. And it's good. And that's the problem. You're like, okay, I can feel the tension building in me, but I'm you're waiting for that release. Like you're waiting for like this thing to, okay, now I can breathe again. But it builds it. By doing it, it's a different kind of way to film a movie. But that's why I think that's what Honeywell means, that it would be a pleaser to the crowd because you're always like, oh, did you see that? That's it gives you a chance to do like, oh, dude, that's so sick. Or like, oh man, they cut her whole head off with a knife. That's impossible. Because it is impossible. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like there's those things in there that you would have in the 80s. I think you would see more in movies from a certain, especially in the 80s. Because they were all, because again, they were filming those but movies on no budget. So you needed that filler to pad out your movie past, the 30 minutes of kills you had, So
Well,
anyway.
this the crowd pleaser part of it is like the sort of, and I think it might have a lot to do with the what is it? Final
Destination.
Final Destination.
destination movies where you have this, where you have the Rube Goldberg deaths,
Oh yeah.
like
Oh, the new one has
somebody's gonna
killer.
die pretty soon because we know someone's gonna die because we see the monkey beating the drum. But then the fun part becomes
How?
what is it? What is it that's gonna set off the string of events that take out these people? And it's just, and watching it the second time, it's even more fun because they definitely pre, like at the beginning with the first shot they show in the store
The pawn, yeah, the pawn shop, yeah. Yeah.
The first shot is of the spear. It's the spear, but then they cut to some knives afterwards and stuff to just sort of like not, to distract you from the spear. But then Chekhov's spear comes in at the end, and then it doesn't just spear him to the wall, it retracts with
Which pulls his entire intact.
intestines attached. So it gives you those extra little tidbits of fun and disgustingness that, and after that first one, we're only going to build from this, and it's a riot. It's fun. It's fun to, I mean, I might be a sick person, but
No, no, but
well, you are.
Yeah,
but
well, I
it
mean,
is what it is what it
those are
is.
not
It's the
mutually
word of the Lord.
exclusive. So, real quick, I do want to mention this because I know for those of us who might have read The Monkey, we know that it's not supposed to be beating a drum. It's supposed to be clapping its cymbals.
Clapping
According
its
to
cymbals,
according to Osgood Perkins, the decision to have the monkey banging a drum instead of the cymbals was due to a rights that the cymbal banging version is owned by the Walt Disney Company. As the toy had appeared as a character in Toy Story 3, which I remember, the cymbal monkey was used in Toy Story 3 because the director of Toy Story 3 is a huge Stephen King fan and wanted to tie in that story into this kids' movie. Because there ain't, and for those of you who are like, oh, Disney movie, like there's Disney movies that got a lot of references in it that are not all on the G-rated side. Let's put it that way. But yeah, so the thing is, the monkey's supposed to be banging the cymbals, which, of course, is if we remember, the cover of Monkey Shines is literally the monkey with the cymbals, and that's why it's that cover. That's referential to the monkey, right? It's the whole idea, like it's all part of that. That is so it banging the drum, which is fine. It's not like that ruined the movie at all. It just gives it a little different thing. Instead of it banging the cymbals together, which is a symbol, again, if you are of a certain age, that's iconic imagery that you've seen in the really real world. I've seen those before, in like, you go to pending,
I used to own one, yeah.
well, I'm just saying is I did not own one, but I've seen them before. I've seen them on shelves before. I've seen whatever. When you go to flea markets, you see them all the time,
Yeah.
right? Kind of thing. I don't ever remember seeing a monkey with drums per se, but again, This monkey here, now I don't know how big yours was, Chris, so your monkey there,
but
but
was
like,
half the size of this
right,
one at
this thing is
least.
humongous,
Yeah.
right? This is big. And that's the whole thing is I think if it was a small little toy, I think visually you would be like, really? But this thing has some weight and mass and size to it, so it's more imposing, right? Whereas again, and not saying it had to be that, but it's just one of those things that it's always to me the monkey, either the cymbals or in this case the drum, just the way it looks, it just seems a little off. You know what I'm saying? Like
Yes.
for a kid's toy, this is a little off, you know?
It's much higher qual the thing about, like, this is one thing I learned from garage sailing in my personal monkey, which was probably my third monkey like that. They never work. They have such, they're made in China 60 years ago, 50 years ago, and you very rarely find one. And usually they're battery powered too. They're not wind up. But you very rare, I could never get one that actually worked. And I do not have the mechanical wherewithal to go in and fix one of them. But like those monkeys were made out of cloth and stuff. And they were kind of, this thing was like a museum piece, and it was in that big, beautiful box. And I love the card in the box that had the naked lady with the key. Just as extra temptation to turn the key, a naked lady holding a key, it made it seem like for a kid that would be just like, oh, this is an adult thing. I just loved it, and I loved how there's obviously a backstory to the monkey that they don't have, feel the need to provide it, which makes it even better. It just
It just
exists.
is.
It You don't
just
even need
is.
that.
Just a
There's no
force.
like, and they spell it out at the end where he's like, look, it wasn't, we didn't do anything to deserve this monkey. We were just in the wrong place at the wrong time or had the wrong relatives or whatever, and that I was like, yes, thank you. This is perfect. We don't need a flashback of like, some old Chinese man making the monkey and putting a curse on it or anything like that, It's just there.
It's very much what Pinhead says to Christie. You opened the box and we came, right? Like if I mean the thing is they were going through the closet and they opened the box. Well, now the monkey's out because the monkey had been there. It hadn't been it killed the father, but it didn't kill anybody else, kind of thing. It's just happened that that's what it is, kind of thing is they're wrong place, wrong time. Right. But unlike Frank, who was searching for that, kind of thing, Christy wasn't. And certainly none of the rest of the family can, well, I shouldn't say that, none of the rest of the family, but sorry, I'm talking about a movie that's like 40 years old. If you haven't seen Hellraiser, get a life and watch it. Fuck. I always feel bad. I reference things. People are like, oh, I haven't seen that. Like, have you not seen Hellraiser? What the hell's wrong with you? Like, grow a set. Anyway. But it's true though, like that, and on the box it says what? It doesn't say lifelike. It says like life, so it's not
Yes,
fair.
yes.
Exactly. With the off-air conversations we have about life are not fair.
Yeah,
Nothing
right.
is fucking fair, and that's
Amen.
the hard part about this is that in life, and this happens, it's not fair. The people, get sick and die and whatever, who don't necessarily, we would say don't deserve it, and then pieces of shit live for fucking forever. But that's like life. And that's what the thing's here. They, he wants it to kill Bill, but he doesn't kill Bill. It kills the mother. It's killing everyone else, but it's not killing him until it eventually does kill Bill, right? The whole thing is all of the deaths, except for the mother, all of the deaths are accidental, quote unquote. Right? The mom has a brain aneurysm, which is like one in 144 million, which means it had to happen to somebody, whatever. But like hers is a quote unquote natural death, but it's, all the other deaths are these in crazy accidents. Oh my God, like you get trampled by 67, wild horses, or, the spear gun goes off, or like all these things are like they're impossible deaths. Right, these
Yes.
crazy, convoluted, whatever kind of things. But that's the thing of it, because it's maybe these people didn't do anything to deserve this. They made
Shit
the deaths
happens.
Right. They made the deaths so over the top, right? Right. They make the deaths so absolutely over the top that because it's a movie, right? It's like it wouldn't be like, well, you know, the mom had the brain aneurysm. Okay, so the babysitter, how'd she die? Okay, well, you know, she was in a car accident, and you don't show, like, no, because that could happen to somebody. Look, I have been to hibachi a number of times. I've never had anyone had their throat slit with a knife, let alone their head decapitated with a regular knife. You couldn't decapitate
falling
someone
right on the hot
right,
flat
on the hot
too.
Flat top. Yeah. Right. But the best is she turns, and that's when it happens. Right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it. So those things are over the top because I think Osgood Perkins is kind of playing with that and saying, look, we get it, guys. Like, we could show you realistic deaths and you'd fucking kill you. You'd want to kill yourself when it's done because you don't want to see that. I don't go to a movie to see real life. I'm going to a movie to kind of escape, whether it's to be funny or horrific or, you know, whatever it might be, right? It's like the new Jurassic World, which is just, you know, fantastical in the way it's presented. Whatever it might be, you aren't going to a movie to sit there and just watch like things that are like life. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. I thoroughly enjoy. And again, I didn't see this when it came out because going to the movies is not a thing I really like to do ever. But I kind of had a feeling just from the trailers. I'm like, okay, I got a feeling if Osgood Perkins keeps up what he's doing, I'm pretty much gonna like this thing because it should be bloody and gory, but might have, you know, enough to say. Now, I got to admit, this does not have the deepest plot in the world.
Got a little thing about absent fathers and stuff like that.
There's
but
not super deep plot.
You're not.
But I don't
learn
think it needs it though.
I don't want it.
Yeah.
Not in this one. I don't want it.
Right.
I just like it just needs little, you know, he sprinkles in the little touches that give it depth. Like after the babysitter died and the older brother going, I was going to marry that girl, you know, and he was sort of flirting with her as a little kid and stuff like that. That was a very kind of realistic scene. You know, that's something a little kid would say, you know, that a kid his age that was like that would say and stuff. And you don't need to put that into the story, but it was just a nice little, you know, there's little touches all the way through it that make it like a little deeper, I guess, but, you know, just a little more lifelike. But no, that's not what I'm in it for. I want a story that's going to have a little bit of scary or a little bit of funny and a lot of gross out. And, you know, it was, you know, and that's what Stephen King would be like. You know, sometimes I would write a book and I would be like, all right, I'm going to scare the hell out of them. And then sometimes he'd be like, no, I'm not really scaring the hell out of them with this one. So I'm just going to gross them out, you know? Yeah. And this had more of the gross out part of it, but yeah, it was, and people seem to like, and maybe even more so after like Stand By Me and The Green Mile and stuff, mm-hmm. where people are like, oh, I can do a Stephen King book and make it, you know, feel like a, you know, a heartwarming movie or, you know, or a lesson about life and growing up and stuff like that. And I think people have like wanted to do those adapt those Stephen King's more because Misery was one that crossed over into like,
well, that's
just
a
Stephen King movie, but just like a, you know, that could have been,
that's it. Well, that's just a potboiler. It's not supernatural gore.
Right. But the general audience is more into stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think those kinds of Stephen King movies, that's why I'm a big fan of Maximum Overdrive. That was Stephen King's coked out movie.
Yeah.
where he
cocaine.
That's Emilio Estevez's movie.
Yeah.
He directed the fucking thing because King couldn't get out of the chair.
Yeah. But, you know, it was just going for the sheer, it was like the short story. It was just
he has
like
this ridiculous premise and you just got to roll with it.
You know, a lot of caricatures, a truck stop full of caricatures and stuff. And it was for fun. And nobody got that movie when it came out. They were just like, this movie is awful. And then when I saw it, I'm like, this isn't the greatest movie ever made, but if it didn't have the Stephen King's name on it and it was just some small movie that came out, people would be like, yeah, give it a chance. It's good fun. You know, it's
and it's got a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's got a great soundtrack. And this one has a great soundtrack too. And it's a very soundtrack like, and Stephen King basically soundtracked his books too. He would open up chapters with quotes from rock songs and stuff to get that song playing in your head. And there was a lot of that feel with this too, you know? And yeah, I love it. It makes me want to, I actually picked up there's a new book that came out of Stephen King short stories, and I'm like kind of looking forward to when I get a chance to read it. It's a weird paperback too. It's a paperback that's like taller than other paperbacks. Yep. It's like a tall, thin paperback. It's weird.
Yeah. So real quick, I just want to put this in. So Osgood Perkins was talking in an interview. He says, here's what he said. I took liberties like a motherfucker. They, meaning Atomic Monster, had a very serious script. Very serious. I felt like too serious. And I told them, this doesn't work for me. The thing with this toy monkey is that people all around it die in insane ways. So I thought, well, I'm an expert on that. Both my parents died in insane, headline-making ways. I spent a lot of my life recovering from tragedy, feeling quite bad. It all seemed inherently unfair. You personalize the grief. Why is this happening to me? But I'm older now, and you realize that shit happens to everyone. Everyone dies, sometimes in your sleep, sometimes in truly insane ways, like I experienced. But everyone dies, and I thought maybe the best way to approach this insane notion is with a smile. And I'm like, that's fucking this movie. That is, he just described exactly what this movie is. But I think this is why, and again, like I said, we are still pretty early on in Osgood Perkins' career, so, you know, kind of thing, but everything I've seen of his, I enjoy, right? So I'm like, everything so far I like. I think he's funny when he's in movies, I just say funny, but he's a good character actor, the way Stephen King was a kind of a good character actor when he was younger and just sneaking into parts and stuff. But I think because he kind of looks at things currently, but yet with kind of one foot in the past, kind of thinking about how things used to be done and how can I make this not the same cookie cutter thing?
Yeah.
So like,
just from the two that we've watched so far, I get the feeling that none of his movies are going to be the same.
No, I don't think so either.
They're all going to have a totally different tone, a totally different message, and a totally different filmmaking style. Because if you didn't put the director credit up for The Monkey in Long Legs, you wouldn't think it was the same director.
The same people.
Not even the same. Yeah, you wouldn't think it's the same person at all.
He does have a little bit of retro style to him, but it wouldn't track enough to be like, oh, this is Osgood Perkins. But there is slight connecting fiber. Like, you know, he likes to do, you know, a little title screen in between parts, and the fonts on the title screens are usually kind of a stylized, which could be really annoying and awful, but it works perfectly for him. And I think a lot of it has to, I think Stephen King had something happen with a kid in a train when he was a little kid that he doesn't remember. But he knows he went out with his friends and one of his friends got hit by a train, but he doesn't remember anything about it. Right. And that comes through in his movies. And, you know, Osgood Perkins had a dad who was living a lie and a mom who died tragically and stuff like that. And it's probably going to be working its way out through all his movies afterwards. And to the benefit of us, I guess, and probably to the benefit of him, too.
You know? I mean, they flat out say in the movie that the dad goes out for a pack of cigarettes, never comes back. Exactly what happened to Stephen King. His dad went out for a pack of cigarettes and never came back.
Yeah.
Really? Because we've never seen Stephen King have those issues brought up in any of his books or movies. Oh, wait. It seems to be in all of them, kind of thing, right? That's the whole idea. Is that, but you know what, though? I mean, and it's horrible to say things like this, and I don't mean this to be sound cold and callous, but some of the best artists in anything
are tortured.
They have to be.
Yeah.
Like, I think you have to have, I don't want to say suffering, but there has to be something that gets it going out of you. I'm not saying that you couldn't be great without it, but it just seems like it's too often the best stuff we get, the stuff that's not just, you know, as to quote, you know, Bill Moseley, Mickey Mouse on one side and Donald Duck up the other, you know, kind of thing, like to get like that, you know, everything's happy, you know, whatever kind of, to get those things that might be a little edgy, might be a little different, might be whatever, that push your buttons, that make you feel unsafe sometimes, that ultimately give you more than the sum of their parts, you kind of need something in there to cause that. It's, yeah. I'm not saying that, you know, it's ideal, and maybe it's not, I mean, you know, people might say you're wrong, how about this person, I mean, again, as we always say, the exception proves the rule. Too often it's somebody who has something going on, it's someone who grew up in this way, like, grew up whatever, you know.
Alfred Hitchcock's mom died young and he got traumatized when his parents thought he'd done something, like stolen something, but he hadn't, and they called the cops to teach him a lesson, and the cops locked him up in jail and traumatized him, and stuff like that. And then we got all those great movies, you know? And he was obsessive compulsive, you know, like a lot of the best artists are, like, you hear the story, you know, it's very rare that you hear somebody saying, you know, oh yeah, he's very well adjusted and, a wonder to work with. Most, like, a lot of the great art comes from people who are like psychotic, obsessive compulsive pricks, you know, and stuff like that. But God bless them if they're gonna, you know, if they can channel it into art instead of like beating their family, then the whole world's better for it.
Yeah.
I mean this is a short movie. We could just sit here and rattle off all the deaths, but like, this is one that just, like,
that's another thing I appreciate about it. An hour and 36 minutes. In, out, done.
Yeah,
everything you need to know. It's still packed full of fun and
this is nice depending upon what your tolerance for gore is, and chances are, if you're listening to this, it's probably fine. Grab your popcorn bucket, man. Just crunch some corn and throw this one on and just
make
have
yourself up some cherry jello for this one.
Yeah, have a larf with it, because it's I was laughing, and I mean, but again, I'm weird, but you know, and then there's the, you know, even with the heavy-handed symbolism at the end, just go with it, man. It's a good time.
Yeah. Well, by the end could have totally gone south. I kind of didn't like his son. His son is very, even though you sort of feel for the kid.
Yeah, he's an angry teenager who doesn't know his dad.
He's got that but something about the actor, the angry teenager thing seemed a little out of, like, something from another movie. But once they got to, you know, the uncle's place, the kid was fine. But yeah, I love that, like, their father, they're like, oh yeah, our father used to travel around the world and bring back all this dumb stuff. And then then the second time I sort of picked up on it, I'm like, wait a minute, he wasn't even doing that. He was just stopping off at the pawn shop before he came home and buying something from the pawn shop and being like, look what I got from, you know, Malaysia or whatever, this monkey. But he was like probably just buying things from that pawn shop. I better bring something home, you know, and all the almost everybody in here is just like, there's just very few people that are like
stable
or agree, you know, like, you know, the main characters are the main characters, and they all work, and you can sympathize with them, but everybody else out in reality are just
kind of,
you
shitty.
Know, just the largest collection of assholes, which is also a very Stephen King is so good at writing assholes, and there's just about every kind of, you know, asshole or sleazy, you know, sleazy aspect to it, to every person, and it's just a riot, and then you can celebrate as a bus full of cheerleaders get decapitated, you know, and be just like, they probably had it coming.
Maybe, or just shit happens.
Right. Shit happens, yeah.
So, yep. So, if you want to see The Monkey, it's available, you know, Blu-ray, 4K, all that stuff is out already. It's also streaming. You can purchase it to stream on Amazon Prime and on Movies Anywhere and what's the other one called? Fandango, not called, it's a Fandango Go or whatever they call it now. It used to be the other one. I don't remember the name of it now. It's called Fandango at Home. Sorry. So it's available there. So it's there's the you can find it if you want to see it. It's not that it's not available there.
I just thought of something that I, who the hell was the person on the horse at the end?
Death.
Yeah.
Was that Death?
It must be Death, yeah.
Hence my comment about the heavy-handed
Yeah.
symbolism.
Yeah, okay, yeah. 'Cause that was the only thing that seemed sort of out of place, but it goes by so fast that like I'd forgotten about it after watching it the first time, and I was just like, oh yeah, that's
Yeah.
It
I
was
like how
kind
he
of leading
nods
up
at,
to that.
I like how he nods at Death, and Death is just sort of like, oh, okay, whatever, fuck you. And takes off. Doesn't give him a nod back, he's just like, ugh. You assholes with your monkeys.
So again, available to, if you want to check it out. And then, did you see it in the theaters? We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email. Again, or did you did you know maybe you don't agree with us. We'd hear that too. Understand that, like, we're not adverse to having a conversation, kind of thing. Like I said, we love to hear from you guys. Obviously all of us here on the network are doing this stuff because it's a labor of love, and we just enjoy, sitting around talking about the things we love to talk about, and hopefully you guys enjoy them as well. So, all right.
And if you disagree with us, well, like, that's just your opinion, man.
Yeah, it's just an opinion.
Well, I'd like to leave everybody with this. Who's smiling now, you grinning son of a whore?
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I love you, Dr. Zaius.
Zaius, will you?